'Tis true, 'tis pity, 'tis pity, 'tis true. Next on Principles and Policies. Welcome to today's edition of Principles and Policies. I'm your host, Barry Sheets, the Executive Director of the Institute for Principled Policy. And along with me today is our co-host, the Vice Chairman of the Institute, my fellow analyst and very good friend, Chuck Michaelis.
Good to have you back in studio. I've been sort of flying solo and having to do these Urums while I do intros to camp videos, the audio sections of the camp videos. So I've had to sit around and think about, you know, how I'm going to analyze it without giving away the store on these audios, because some of them are only 45 or 50 minutes long. So it's good to have you back. Now we have 59 minutes and 58 seconds of our own time that we have to fill.
I'm sitting here thinking that somewhere in there might have been some subtle thing saying that I bring a lot of hot air filler to the program, and I appreciate that.
Well, oh my. No. I think people sometimes they like what we do on the playing the stuff that's out there, but they also like the way we bungle through the news of the day too.
And you know what? I think bungle is a really appropriate sobriquet for what we do here on the program most of the time. No, and we're glad for our listeners. As a matter of fact, ladies and gentlemen, we're very thankful for you. You know, we've been on the air now for, oh my goodness, Chuck, what, almost 2.5 years.
Yeah,
it has been, because it was October of 2011 that we started.
That could be.
I'm pretty sure that's the case, and if not, Mike will correct us after we get off air today. But anyhow, ladies and gentlemen, we talk about a lot of issues on this program, mostly around politics, oftentimes around religion, oftentimes around the intersection of those two. And yes, no, the world doesn't like split open and everything fall apart when we actually talk about religion and politics together, because you can do that. As a matter of fact, that's probably one of the things that you should be talking about a little bit more, is the intersection of faith and our policy. Now, and Chuck, the reason why I say that is not because that's just our favorite topic.
No.
It's because those two topics have more to do with how we live our lives, how we intersect with the rest of the world, or how the rest of the world intersects with us as believers, than pretty much anything else. I mean, we can talk about money all day long, and we've had some good folks on here, economists, others. You know, we can talk about history, which, you know, I'm glad you're here, because that 58 minutes would be a lot of, it would have been about 47 minutes of ers if it's me trying to talk about it. You have a voluminous grasp of history. And we can talk about all of the other things. We talk about the family. But the point is, it's what we believe about God and our role in the universe, and how we act out those convictions in our actions. And policy is action. And that is what helps us to shape our culture, helps shape our shared values and belief systems in this country, if we still have that. And that's probably what we're going to talk about most today, is whether or not we still have that or not.
Yeah, well, let's think about that for a minute, because there's a reason why people no longer think in those in the terms of politics and religion being an intersection in their personal worldview.
And that's because you've been told, along with one other topic, which we usually don't go into much on this program, but the three things you're not supposed to talk about at a dinner party, religion, politics, and, well, sexuality.
Yeah.
However, Chuck, we're going to blow the doors off today, because we're going to talk about all three
all
of them.
All three of them. Yeah, so just don't play, you know, if you want to go out online and get a copy of this program, which you can do at principledpolicy.com, I wouldn't play that at a dinner party.
And then again, maybe you should play
maybe
it at
you
a
should.
Dinner party.
Well, my point is that I've confronted this particular issue, and the argument that's been made is that, well, you know, the reason that the church should not be involved in talking about these issues is the fact that God stopped working with nations and went over to individuals with the new covenant. And that particular way of thinking sort of took hold in about the middle of the 19th century, if not before, really. It has its roots in humanism of the Middle Ages, in the late Middle Ages and the early Renaissance period. But the fact is that really took hold about in the 20s. And the church bought it. In other words, when I say the church, I mean the American so-called fundamentalist movement bought into that, and people dropped out from about 1925, which is, Gary DeMar does a great analysis of this. In a video series that I have of his. I re-listen to it in the car on occasion. And it basically says that the church dropped out in 1925 and really didn't start reawakening to the idea that the church should have something to do with these issues until the election of 1976. And that was Jimmy Carter, who purported to be a born-again Christian. Now, in the meantime, we come to find out that I'm not questioning Jimmy Carter's credentials as calling himself a Christian. What I'm questioning is his worldview. We come to find out that Jimmy Carter is a flaming theological liberal. And along with that particular idea comes another set of ideas about what you actually believe about Jesus Christ and how... Yes. The church should interact in politics. Now, really, regarding the church being really active was, of course, the election of 1980,
right?
With Ronald Reagan,
the rise of the moral majority.
Of the moral majority, and you can there are stories out there where Pat Robertson, who has since sort of gone on way off. Somewhere that nobody knows where he is. He's just sort of out there, la la land. But he talked about the fact that he had had meetings with Jimmy Carter in the 70s and thought him sincere. And by 1980, all those guys had abandoned him because he had abandoned them.
Right.
And that's what we've discovered recently, really, Barry, if you think about it. Evangelicals came alive and, for the most part, hooked up with the Republican Party, and since then have been used by the Republican Party. There's no other way to put it. We've been used by them, when I say we, I haven't been used by them because I've been a third party guy or an independent voter, really. Since I first registered to vote, which was for the election of 1976. Very interestingly. So what I see out there is a sudden awakening to the idea, or a lot of evangelicals are coming awake to the fact that they're being used by the Republican Party. And there are some who are starting to wake up to this. More liberal people who have hooked up with the other party are starting to realize they've also been used by the Democratic Party.
Yeah, and
to some extent, you and I involved in third-party politics,
yes.
We got used by that third party.
Yeah, well that's true. That's true. And I call that mission creep, Chuck.
Yes.
When you say you believe one thing, but then operationally you run as far away from it as you possibly can because you think somehow that's going to make you more saleable.
Yes.
Now, sad part about it is, in many instances, they're absolutely right. It did make them more saleable. The question is, what are you buying? That's the question.
That is the question.
Now, if we would do this in retail, Chuck, or you do this in your business, they would call it false advertising.
Yes.
Because you'd be putting up something saying it's one thing, knowing full well it's something else, and expecting people who buy it to continue to hold the illusion that it's the thing that you told them it was. Now, if that's confusing, folks, that's okay. I sometimes confuse people when I talk. But what we're really talking about is, and Chuck, you kind of hit on this because it does happen in both parties, but We're mainly focusing today on the grand old party, the GOP, or God's own party.
God's own party.
As some people would have said that at one point in time, although I don't believe anybody says that anymore.
I can think of at least one person who probably still is
like that. Oh, my. Well, we need to have a...
we won't go through that.
We need to have a radical intervention with that individual if we could possibly do so. Anyhow... now, the reason why we're talking about this is because that's what's in the news right now, ladies and gentlemen. You see, over April here last month, now, I apologize that we did have to run a number of specials, although I don't apologize for the fact that it's a way for us to advertise that camp's coming up real soon, and we'll talk about that here in a couple of minutes. But I was out doing my civic duty. No, I wasn't voting. I wasn't registering people to vote. I was actually running the campaign of a candidate. This candidate was running against the establishment. He was running against an incumbent, as a matter of fact. I had never been on the ballot before, and some folks had asked him if he would run, and he said yes. And because his pastor is a good close friend of mine, he called me up and said, can you please help him?
Well,
and I tried to.
His pastor is the
chairman of
the Institute for Principled Policy.
That's right. So I went ahead and took a look at the district and basically all but moved up to Worcester, Ohio to run a campaign for a few weeks. Honestly, folks, it was, I don't know what Chuck has mentioned to you before, but this is one that got to me a little bit. I actually was in the hospital for a couple of days with what was later deduced to be multiple stress issues, which looked like a heart attack or a stroke. So anyhow, I'm back and I'm better, and I'm glad to be here. I am really glad to be here. But it really is, the race that I was working on is a microcosm of what's going on. And this is kind of, it's broiling over in the higher realms of Republican Party politics. As a matter of fact, you can't get much higher than this. This was at the Republican National Committee's spring meeting, which was held in April. And there was a big issue, and as soon as I read this article, and this article that we're working off of was out last Friday from the Washington Times by Ralph Z. Hallow, who's one of their regular contributors, I immediately emailed a copy of the article to Chuck, and I said, does this sound eerily familiar to you? Because what happened... and we'll recount our little bit of history, too, with third-party politics, because, honestly, folks, you can't script them any closer to real life than this. When the Republican National Committee members, and those are representatives from each of the state parties, go out and they have their meetings and discuss what they're going to do and getting ready for the fall elections and the national spotlights that are going to be on everybody, because, obviously, we're going to have a presidential election here in a couple of years. Well... we had a situation where one of the state parties had put forth a resolution and had said that in their state party, they had removed a couple of the planks of the Republican national platform. So they were not holding any of their candidates to these particular planks. Now, that state Republican Party was the state of Nevada, which is part of the reason why I got that old deja vu feeling, because it was the Nevada Party in the CP that was causing the issues in relation to our experiences. But a member from Oklahoma who didn't like the fact that you've got a state party out there basically saying, we can pick and choose what we want out of the national platform to decide how we want to, you know, let our candidates run on, sent an email kind of rebuking them for it and asking for them to be censured. Well, okay. Then the Nevada delegation turned around and sent a huge blast and says, we can do what we want to.
Yeah.
We can do anything we feel like. Well, and that's fine in one sense, Chuck. And, you know, as a... small L libertarian kind of feeling. If you're a local entity, but the problem is you're not a local entity. You are the state expression of the national party. The national party has a platform. every 4 years at the convention, there's a fight over the platform. The platform committee is the hot button area to go to, because it will constantly, whether it's immigration, whether it's marriage, whether it's life issues, whether it's taxation, whether it's gun rights, there's always some fight at the platform committee level in the Republican National Committee every cycle.
Well, for instance, that's an important point, and it's an important point because of some of the shenanigans you're seeing now,
right,
inside the Republican Party, right, where, first of all, many of the Tea Party types were purposefully, when some of these rules were being adopted by the Republican Party, were kept out of the room so they couldn't vote on them.
Right, and even though they were kept out of the room, they were still able to, and because when it got to the floor, that's when everything got put back right, because the majority of the delegates didn't support what the platform committee
did. But the parts that didn't get put right are what you're seeing now with the restriction of Republican debate.
Yes, that's
okay.
True.
If you listen, we're going to make things much better. We're going to restrict debate to quote-unquote serious candidates. Well, as we have talked about, because we have been third-party advocates, that idea of quote-unquote electability and quote-unquote serious candidates is a self-fulfilling prophecy.
Mm-hmm.
Because you can't get traction unless you're quote-unquote considered a serious candidate, and you can't be considered a serious candidate unless you can get traction. So what happens is that the party puts out their chosen ones, and everybody else comes along and they say, well, we don't think you're a serious candidate. So what they did at the last convention, because they thought that the debate process had weeded out too many of the quote-unquote chosen ones, and they were absolutely right that it had weeded out a lot of the chosen ones.
Yeah.
It also weeded out a lot of the Tea Party types, because, you know, anytime you accidentally sneeze or say something that's garbled that can be reinterpreted as something else is lit upon by the all-too-eager media and the all-too-eager leadership of the party to say, well, that just proves you're not mainstream. Well, the question then is, what does mainstream really mean?
Well, I think the Nevada delegation to the RNC is actually trying to define that for themselves. Because, okay, and these are the planks that they decided to get rid of in the Republican Party platform, okay? They decided to get rid of the planks regarding marriage as between a man and a woman, and the pro-life plank of the platform. So another, and they wrote it. They wrote back to the committee and said, the removal of two social issues from our platform does not mean that we, they got it in quotes, as individual people are quote unquote for gay marriage or for abortion. Really? But you as people are the ones voting on your platform. It begs the question, I think, Chuck. And they go on, the Nevada delegation goes on to say, the removal of these planks recognizes the inappropriateness of the existence of these planks in our platform in the first place. In other words, so traditional marriage and life are inappropriate in a political party platform.
Where have we heard this before?
Yes, okay. And we can go into that here in a minute. But I want to kind of back up just a little bit. This sounds fairly egregious, but let me give you a little point of reference, Ohio folks, that you may not know. The Ohio Republican Party has refused to adopt the entire Republican platform, the national platform. That's right. They do not adopt it. The State Central Committee, in a overt act, refused to adopt the national platform. There is no platform at the state party level in Ohio. Trust me, I looked it up. A number of people looked it up because they were very upset when the party as a state level entity, got involved in some of these races, including state central committee races, and were doing things that actually violated their own bylaws. But somebody said, well, what about the platform? And then they've come to find out, oh, wait a minute, the state party has refused to adopt the Republican National Platform. So at least, and I'm not giving them really any kudos for this, at least Nevada's only getting rid of marriage and life. They haven't chucked everything else.
Everything. Look, you and I have been to meetings now at the State House where we have openly asked people, why do you continue to work within the Republican Party when it's become obvious that you're not only not wanted, but you are considered a non-person? And the answer was the platform. This person could not possibly have known that Ohio had not
adopted
the platform and did not intend to abide by the platform.
Yeah, now that's where we kind of have to be real careful, because they will swear up and down, well, yeah, we'll follow the platform. We just don't want to be bound by it. You know, so because they'll go out, and you got the mailers. I saw some here in your mail, sitting over there in the pile, using the words conservative and pro-jobs and pro-life. But you know what, Chuck? If those are not cemented to or anchored to something in writing that they've sworn to uphold, then all they are words.
Yes.
And it's the same vocabulary, different dictionaries.
Yes.
And I think that's what we're dealing with here, because Nevada, the Republican State Party in Nevada, you know, when they were upset about this accusation by this Oklahoma committee member, Carolyn McLarty, who basically said that this is a symptom of the infiltration of the Republican Party by those who really want to destroy it. Well, I think Ms. McLarty's onto something here.
Yeah, well, that's exactly the same argument that we used
at the CP.
In the Constitution Party when we were in the National Committee.
And the Nevada delegation there, who had similar belief system to the RNC, amazingly enough, to the Nevada Republicans, said the same thing, that and this is how Nevada responded. They said, we're insulted by this accusation. Yeah, okay, sounds familiar. Most of our delegates have deep spiritual beliefs. Chuck?
You and I both know
what that means. We all know what that means. We'll leave that go for right now,
right,
but we'll talk about that here in a little bit.
Yeah.
But so what we have here is the fact that now the RNC, some of the establishment Republicans, are very unhappy about the fact that this dirty laundry has been aired publicly. And they weren't happy with Nevada because, well, the RNC is banking on keeping this fiction up that the Democratic Party is the party of abortion and that the RNC is the party of life, the pro-life party.
Right.
Okay, Chuck, I've seen enough GOP-endorsed candidates who were, shall we say, loose on their definition of what pro-life means. Now, and again, folks, before I get blasted with the moniker that I am some kind of purist.
that old thing, yeah.
Yeah, that old chestnut. The point is, I realize there's only one perfect person on the planet, and look what happened to him, right?
Yeah
exactly. But the point is that if you have a platform that states unequivocally that life means beginning at fertilization, conception, and until natural death, that's what pro-life means. It doesn't mean pro-life except in the cases of rape or incest, pro-life except for severe fetal deformity, pro-life unless the mother signed a waiver and gave her consent.
Yeah.
Which is kind of how many Republicans are defining pro-life now,
yes,
because
exactly.
They voted on, in this state, they voted on bills that allow abortions if the mother gives their consent after being told all the information.
Well, so, as if that's some kind of a reasonable position.
Well, we can argue that on another program because that's totally unreasonable, but
that's
me. But so basically, the RNC's got themselves a real identity crisis going on right now. One that was self-generated.
Oh, absolutely, it was self-generated.
First and foremost, the National Party has spent an awful lot of time in basically trying to take control of everything. You mentioned the rules of debate and who gets on the stage in presidential primaries. They try to control all that, but when it comes to platform and party discipline, we're going to leave that to the states. We can't do that. And that's kind of the argument they were making, was that, well, it's the National Committee. This is David Norcross, who's the former general counsel to the Republican National Committee, saying the National Committee should stay out of disputes between the state parties, unquote. Really? Really? I thought that's what a national party was for, yeah, was to be the unifying feature among the states. Now, okay, that's fine. Now, what you have in Nevada, though, is that they took umbrage at being called divisive. That was their big deal. They took umbrage at being called divisive because they believe, and here, quote, and I'll quote this here. This is from the Nevada, about their getting rid of the pro-marriage plank and the pro-life plank of the national platform and adopting it for Nevada. It says, quote, Nevada is home to many diverse people, including a very large LGBT population. The GOP is by definition a party of inclusion, not exclusion. Chuck, okay, I'm going to stop right there. If the GOP is a party, then by definition, it is exclusive.
Thank you. It has to be.
It has to be in order to be an entity.
Otherwise, it's merely an organization that people join for one reason or another.
It's merely this amorphous mass, a jellyfish, if you will, and there is no difference between a GOPer and a DRCer and a DNC
It's a mob.
It's a mob. The reason why you have a political party is because you have principles, you have standards, you have fundamental beliefs that are, in many cases, diametrically opposed to that opposing party. You know, why do you have a Democratic Party and a Republican Party? Because they believe governance should happen differently in many cases. Not so much anymore.
Not so much anymore.
But originally.
Yeah. Well, This goes back to 1968. Think what you will about George Wallace, but what he said was there's not a dime's worth of difference between the two parties. And what he meant was there's Socialist Party A and Socialist Party B.
And that's true.
And what they're fighting over is how much fascism, what style of a socialism we're going to adopt,
exactly,
whether we're going to adopt Marxism or fascism. And right now the Marxists are in front, but the right, fascists are doing their best to get back in and dismantle some of the Marxism and turn it back into fascism.
Well, let me go on with this with Nevada's response here, because I think it's hilarious, okay? They say basically Nevada is leading a charge to focus our party. Now, by that, they're not talking about the state party. They're talking about nationally. Our party on core principles, which are shared by a majority of Americans, including the new generation of voters that is looking to us for leadership on the issue of limited government and personal freedom. Okay, I'm going to stop right there again, Chuck. Although I know the Republicans, when they use those terms, means something a little different.
Yeah.
What they're really saying is, we're the new Libertarian Party.
We're the Libertarians.
Okay, because the limited government is a buzzword. It's a catchphrase. What does it really mean? Does it mean government limited to only we being in control? Well, that's what the Republicans mean by it. Is it limited to the point of government takes care of all the things that you shouldn't be taking care of? That's the Democratic view of limited government. Or is it libertarian limited government? Government shouldn't exist at all, and everything should be done by private contract.
Well, okay, yeah. This is sort of like, okay, 2010, the Tea Party is a fledgling movement, and,
right,
and everybody in the Republican leadership is trying to co-opt it. 2012, 2 years later. All the oversized, seven-color, fancy-schmancy mailers come out for all the quote-unquote conservatives with the little circle logo in one of the lower corners that has a teacup that's steaming, and it says Tea Party Values.
Mm-hmm. Yep, I remember that.
Yeah. 2014 comes along. Who had that on any of their flyers? Nobody.
Well, nobody. Yeah, that's right, because they realized that...
they couldn't co-opt it.
Couldn't co-opt it, so they had to run away from it.
We did a show right before you went on hiatus.
You're right.
Where we talked about this Joker who called himself the... what was it? The thought leader of the Tea Party.
Yes, yes.
Who had resigned because the Tea Party... He didn't leave the Tea Party. The Tea Party left him. Well, the fact is, the Tea Party left him in 2010 when it started.
Right. That's pretty much true.
He was a guy who tried to co-opt... He was one of the guys who was trying to co-opt the Tea Party. And,
well, that's kind of what the Nevada delegation of the GOP is doing here. Now, I'm going to continue on with this comment here. If we, as a political party, continue to exclude Americans that agree with our core principles of freedom and limited government, how can we expect to attract new candidates or continue to get quality Republican candidates elected? Okay, if you don't have standards, how do you know their quality?
What a quality is.
If you don't have standards, and that's the problem with the Ohio GOP right now, they don't have a standard they're going by. So what does quality mean? Well, quality means anything we want it to mean. Proven conservative, tough conservative, conservative, blah, 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 blah. You can say that word all day long, and it means absolutely nothing.
Well, it's the whole qualified conservative movement. In other words, it started out really the primary one was compassionate conservatism. Now we've got the thinking conservative or the cerebral conservative or I'm trying to think what the current phrase is for those who are coming out and stumping for things like amnesty, immigration reform. There's a name they're taking, quote-unquote, conservative. It's the qualified...
Common sense conservatism.
Yeah. There's a couple of those out there. And what that really means is not conservative.
It's exactly. It's anti-conservative is what it really means. Okay, but Chuck, ultimately, the Nevada Party, whether they meant to or not, took the skirt off. And they actually showed why they actually did what they did.
Yes.
And here's the money quote, as you want to say it. Quote, "Any resources that we spend continuing to push divisive issues will reduce the resources we need for the real fight of electing Republicans that will advocate for our core principles." Chuck, and listeners, I've got one name for you. It's a name we've used on this program before. It's from Nevada. Sheldon Adelson.
Yeah.
The billionaire casino magnat who wants gay marriage and who is not pro-life and who every national Republican has been running to Nevada to go visit. As a matter of fact, John Kasich and Rob Portman were both out there. That's the program we talked about before I went on hiatus.
Exactly.
That was what we were talking about. Now the Nevada GOP is stripping the pro-life and the pro-marriage plank from their platform because they're afraid they're not going to be able to attract new candidates or get quality Republican candidates or to have the resources they need for the real fight, Chuck. In other words, they're afraid Sheldon Adelson's going to cut the money tap off.
Well, quality means moderate.
Yes, it does.
It means not conservative.
And moderate just means liberal.
Liberal.
It's a nice way of saying liberal.
Well, thank you, because I've been caught in that trap, you know, the label trap as well.
Right.
The fact is that moderate means liberal.
Yeah.
Because all these issues they're talking about, life, marriage, the gambling issue, which is, let's face it, Sheldon Adelson's the vice merchant.
Yeah.
You really don't think that they don't look the other way down there while prostitution goes on in their place, in a more high class form, call girls and that kind of thing, the high, you know, not the drug addict, you know, thing that we think about stepping out of the shadows. No, these guys are vice merchants, and what the Nevada committee or party is trying to say is, we take a neutral stance on these issues. What's the first thing that we know about politics and about, in fact, everything in life?
There is no neutrality.
There is no such thing as neutrality. You either oppose evil or you're for evil.
There is no gray area.
Yeah. And am I saying that gambling is evil? Yes.
Yes, I
now,
yes, and I would
do
agree
I
with
think
that.
If you're playing penny ante poker at your kitchen table.
If you're playing, if you're playing a friendly game of cards among friends, and it's this is how I define it, Chuck. Anytime a governmental entity is the House, or a governmental entity is giving tax breaks to those who are the House, then you have real evil.
Well, that's the whole point. When you're playing penny ante poker at your table at home, there is no House.
There is no House.
The House is basically the pot.
Yeah.
and the pot always wins, and somebody always takes home the pot. And when you play poker at an establishment that caters to that, you bet there's a House. And the House always gets its cut.
Oh, absolutely.
Always. And it's the lion's share. Flat out. So these guys are vice merchants. The whole life thing, how can you be neutral on life? No such thing. Well, how can you be neutral on marriage?
You can't be neutral on any of these issues, but I think the funny thing, the ironic thing about this particular little debate that Mr. Haller brings out in his article is that the Nevada GOP is like so many other liberal entities. They want their cake and they want to eat it too.
Yes.
Because, number one, they don't want the national party telling them what to do, and they don't want any other state entity, including Ms. McLarty from Oklahoma, criticizing them when they do something. But what did they state, as I mentioned earlier, what did they state that their true purpose for doing this was? Nevada is leading a charge to focus our party on core principles,
which are shared
by a majority of Americans. They didn't say Nevadans, they said Americans. In other words, they are trying to force the national party to abandon the planks of marriage and life. But yet they're complaining when the national party is criticizing them for doing it themselves. Now, which way is this going to go? I mean, now, Miss Nevada Party, Nevada GOP, are you going to say we have a right as a state to do what we want to and then shut up when Oklahoma doesn't and other states don't and other states strengthen their planks? Or are you going to start whining and throwing a fit and screaming about how you're out of touch with these voters and we've got to get back to core principles and we're going to lose elections and we're divisive and blah, 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 blah. Yeah, and this is all the stuff they put in their email. Okay, Chuck, the terms that I'm using are terms from the Nevada email.
Barry, this is so much an echo of what we dealt with
in '06,
from 2004 to
from 2003 to about 2008.
I guess it's from 1999.
Yeah,
because
that's true.
You and I weren't involved at that point, but people were telling us this goes back to 1999.
Yeah, so it goes almost almost a 10-year window
to,
there
to 2006. This
well, actually
almost,
went beyond that. It went off to 2008.
Well, it actually went beyond that because if you think about it, what was the slogan in 2004 when Mike Peruka was the candidate? We are the only pro-life, 100% pro-life
party. Right.
What was it? What did it had it morphed into by 2008 with a candidate who supposedly was on our side?
Yeah, who wasn't really.
And who wasn't. And we won't mention his name. You can look him up.
Chuck Baldwin.
Chuck Baldwin. You can look it up. We are the most pro-life party.
Right. They had abandoned the 100% principle.
There is a...
Because they thought they could attract more libertarians that way.
Exactly. That there is an ocean's width, the Pacific Ocean's width between 100% pro-life, no exceptions, and the most pro-life party. Those are not the same thing. They're not even close to the same thing. And what happened... And it was Nevada. Actually, it was the Western states. It was the Western libertarians.
Right.
And it is steeped in a religious tradition out there that, I don't know, maybe we shouldn't go into that. But
yeah, we should.
Okay.
Yeah, we should.
Honestly, folks, our biggest problem, and if you really believe that this particular church is pro-life, then you really need to examine that issue because they're not, and that's the Mormons.
Yeah, that's true.
The Mormons came right out and basically used the Murray-Rothbard argument, attempted to use the Murray-Rothbard argument. They got slapped down pretty fast. And that was the idea that an unwanted child was an unwelcome invader. And as an invader, the mother had the choice to kill it.
By using
defensive force in order to protect herself from this unwanted invader. that was one of the arguments that got used by someone who was very active in the Mormon Church, and they cited Mormon sources in order to protect, in order to support that argument. And in fact, the argument was given to us that the Mormon Church had had to adopt that position, because if they didn't, then they wouldn't be able to continue to evangelize in China. So they gave an evangelical reason for being pro-abortion. Now, they claimed they were still pro-life because, well, you know, nobody's pro-abortion. Again, folks, there is no neutrality.
And same vocabulary, different dictionaries.
Yes, exactly.
And that's what it really got down to. And when you start peeling back the layers of that onion, that's what it's all about. Now, I believe that the Nevada GOP is mainly girded by Mormon theology? Yeah, I do, as a matter of fact, because that's one of the biggest hotbeds of Mormonism outside of Utah, is Nevada.
Utah, Nevada, Arizona, New Mexico, Colorado.
But do I believe it's driven more by a theological distinctive or by a need for campaign funds in order to get your candidates elected?
Bingo.
And part of the reason why I believe Ohio doesn't adopt the platform, because then they don't have anything they have to answer for when they get a big money donor who likes gay marriage, or who is pro-abort, or who doesn't like guns. Well, that's okay. Our party doesn't stand for any of that.
Okay, you and I have talked about this off air. The fact is that one of the reasons that we did Medicaid expansion was because there are a number of insurance companies who like the idea of Medicaid expansion because it's a guaranteed profit for them. They have a guarantee. If Obamacare expands, and let's get down to brass tacks, as we've been saying all along, Medicare and Medicaid expansion is Obamacare.
Yes.
And the reason that the companies like it is because for the big ones who survive the whole mess under the current system as it's set up, some people are trying to claim that this is private insurance, and I laugh about that. Of course it's not private insurance.
No.
It's companies who are competing within a very narrow margin. And what's going on is they have a guaranteed profit. These companies are not going to be allowed to fail because, A, quote unquote, they're too big to fail.
Right.
The reason they won't be allowed to fail is because then the facade is off and we go from a fascist system, which this is, to a Marxist system. Now, I won't kid you that there isn't a fight inside. The Republicans want to save the fascist system, and the Democrats want the fascist system to collapse so they can go to a single payer. If you've heard the term single payer, that can be very confusing if you don't know what it means. What single payer means is that the government becomes the only insurer.
Right.
Period.
Exactly.
Like the National Health Service in Britain. That is the way they want it to go. Now, the problem being that it's already becoming, even with the little bit that we've adopted here, it's becoming so expensive and inoperable that doesn't look like it's going to work, and everybody knows that Britain's system is an abject failure. But that being said, that's why you're seeing the wishy-washiness from, in Kasich really thinks, as we talked about in that show with Sheldon Adelson, about Sheldon Adelson, Kasich really thinks that this is going to be his path to the White House. And he really thinks, folks, you watch. He says he's not running for president. And he's flattered that people think that maybe he should, but he's really not interested in the job. Come on. Stop kidding yourself.
Okay. How much time do we have left?
Oh, about 16 minutes.
Okay, good. We can get into this then. For those of you who think that that's true and you're buying it, let me just give you this point of fact and reference, okay? This is coming from the Columbus Dispatch's daily briefing blog, and this was over the weekend on Saturday, on the 10th of May, last Saturday. Headline, former Republican National Chairman fearful of Republicans.
Yes.
Oh, my goodness, Chuck. So what we had was the Ohio GOP, those folks without a platform, decided to have a state dinner to laud all of their great, you know, Republicans who are, you know, principled and stand up for the... Oh, wait a minute. They don't have a platform. Okay, I guess I'm not sure what they're standing up for. But they had the former national RNC chairman, Haley Barbour. Now, if anybody remembers Haley Barbour, it was during his time that we started having fights over the platform.
Yeah, that's right. Well, not only that, he was governor of Mississippi when Hurricane Katrina went through, and what was his big solution?
Federalize everybody and bring in FEMA.
That was part of it. And also to remember that Mississippi had gambling, but it was offshore.
Offshore, so bring it on shore.
Bring it on shore.
Yep,
we're gonna recover the state economy through gambling.
Right? How's that working out for them? I'm not so sure.
Not so sure.
Okay. So anyhow, Barbour gives his speech at this state dinner on Saturday night with all of these establishment Republicans, and yes, folks, they were all establishment Republicans. Okay. Nobody goes to these dinners except the rank and file, the GOP. Now, you might get some of the conservatives who are on the state committee
That's
and others.
That's the exact point. That's the why this is put in terms that it is.
Yes, it is. Yes, it is. So, anyhow, Haley Barbour said that he hopes a significant threat to Republican success in this year's election vanishes. And what he's talking about is Republicans, but only certain Republicans.
Only
certain Republicans. And what he's upset about, supposedly, are these big outside interest groups who GOP donors give money to, and then they attack good Republicans. Now, the groups he's talking about are people like Freedom Works, Americans for Prosperity,
yep.
Club for Growth, GOA.
our friend Tom DeWeese over at American Policy Center.
Basically, what he's really saying is he doesn't like groups who actually go out and do the research and find out what a politician's real record is and then share it with people.
Yeah. They want the grassroots to vote, and they want them to give money, but they don't want them to actually demand anything. That's basically what he's saying.
Yeah, that's
shut up, get in line, vote for the candidates we give you.
Yeah. Now, and it's funny because Roland's got a quote in here. He says, the veteran of the Reagan administration says he still believes the former president's adage that someone who agrees with you 80% of the time is, quote, not a 20% traitor, unquote. Chuck, my response to that is, give them enough time.
Yeah.
Give them enough time, and they will be. They'll be more than a 20% traitor. They'll be a complete traitor. I've been in politics long enough. I've seen it happen.
Well, I have to ask. Okay, that's a philosophy.
Yes.
How has that philosophy played out?
It has been a shipwreck.
It's
been a total shipwreck.
It has proven to be a false way of thinking about it, because a 20% trader or a 20% an 80%er usually has fundamental differences in the way he looks at the world than you do, and that 20%. Yeah, sure. Oh, we're for small government. Well, what does that mean? As you pointed out earlier in the show, that's a buzz phrase.
Yeah, it is.
It doesn't mean any. It just means, well, small in some areas, but very big in others, because after all, big government is a good thing. You know, big government needs to come in and wipe away tears and during natural disasters. Really? What did places around the country do before there was federal flood relief and federal hurricane relief and federal tornado relief?
I think they all pitched in together and worked and helped each other.
And they rebuilt each other's stuff.
Yeah.
And things came on. It didn't become a giant welfare
program. Sounds a little Amish, but, you know, hey, maybe that works.
You know, that's the difference between, for instance, the way New Orleans handled Katrina and the way Galveston and Texas handled their last hurricane down in Galveston.
Yeah.
The Galveston people pitched in, collected on what insurance they had, rebuilt what they had with what they had, and there are people in New Orleans who are still sitting around waiting for the federal government to come build something for them.
Yeah, isn't that something? But anyway. So here's Haley Barbour again, and Chuck, remember that National GOP Committee meeting was in April, and I'm sure he was probably there. Sounds to me like he's got a little Nevada in him, because what's he saying? He's saying that Republicans will have to realize that the a major political party needs to form numerous coalitions. And that just means not everyone's going to agree with everybody else. And, you know, if Rob Portman seeks the presidency in 2016, well, we're just going to have to all come to grips with that. And he says, basically says that, Barber says that such a stance, his support for gay marriage, won't be a litmus test in such states as Iowa and Mississippi.
You want to bet?
I'm sure that that is his hope and his dream, Chuck.
Yeah.
But I'm honestly, I got a name for him. It's called the Iowa Christian Coalition,
yeah,
or what it's now called, you know.
That withdrew.
The Iowa Christian Alliance.
Yeah.
They made a big stink over that 4 and 8 years ago over that issue.
Okay? And they withdrew from the Christian Coalition.
Because of it.
Because of it.
Okay. So, but if he thinks that they're going to walk into Iowa with a pro-gay marriage Republican potential nominee who's going to come out with the nomination, they plan on spending an awful, awful lot of money.
Basically what they're going to do, I think what we're looking at here is an imminent split in the Republican Party. A la the Whigs and the Republicans in the 1850s. Because what's happening is that 80-20 thing is turning more into like 60-40.
Yeah, maybe. And that's maybe being generous.
Yeah, and what's going on here is the fact that there are people who are saying, okay, this far and no further. And these guys are shoving guys like Kasich, guys like Barber, guys like Boehner, guys like Eric Cantor, who basically sort of got his head handed to him in a local party showdown over leadership at the state level. And basically, Cantor's hand-picked candidate basically got sent home with his hat in his hand. There are people who are backlashing, and the grassroots are backlashing against this stuff. And the fact is, we're going to replay Bob Dole. We're going to replay John McCain. We're going to replay Mitt Romney. They're going to hand us this guy, force him down our throats, and nobody's going to come out and vote for him. You can play the game that Barack Obama stole the 2008 and 2012 elections all you want. The fact is, the only reason he was able to win was the fact that a lot of mainstream Republicans said, I'm not voting for that guy.
No, they didn't. That's probably going to be the same thing. Now, I think you pulled up an article that the president of the U.S. Chamber of Commerce,
yes,
has been threatening Republicans that if they don't pass immigration reform, i.e. amnesty, that they might as well not field a candidate in 2016.
Well, that's right.
Chuck, we all know that politics has become a money game. That's mainly it. You know, I just dealt with a candidate who otherwise should have beaten the incumbent, but because the party probably spent, and we'll know next month when all of the post-primary campaign finance filings come out, probably spent close to $1 million keeping this guy in office.
$1 million to keep the guy in the 27th Senate District of Ohio.
Right, exactly. In a primary.
In a primary.
In a primary. Now, they've also spent hundreds of thousands of dollars on keeping State Central Committee people in Ohio, because that's where they get elected, is
sure,
in the primary.
So, basically,
I'm sure you got mail. I know I got two or three cards for the endorsed candidate about how that State Central Committee person was going to stop Obamacare. Now, I'm smart enough and have a little bit political savvy that as soon as I saw it, I started laughing uproariously because it's like they actually have no play in it. And what play they do have is in nominating candidates to stand for election. And what is the moniker of the standard operating procedure of the incumbent Republican State Central Committee? Endorse the incumbents.
Endorse the incumbents.
Who have all said, Obamacare is here to stay and we just got to live with it.
Except for three.
Except for three.
Except for three.
Who didn't get the endorsement.
Who didn't get the endorsement.
That's right.
That would be... oh, gosh. Now names escape. Ron Hood.
John Becker. Ron Magg.
And Ron Magg.
Yeah.
All basically said, well, they're not team players. Which, what that means is, they were adamantly opposed to things like Medicaid expansion. The very thing that the Central Committee came out and said that they wanted to make sure that was repeal Obamacare. but yep. expand Medicaid. Those are mutually exclusive positions. Those are mutually exclusive positions. And, folks, this is where, you know, you can't shut off. I realize that politics is it looks dirty and ugly, and it is. But it's dirty and ugly because we're not involved in it, and we shut off and refuse to get involved and say, clean it up.
Yeah.
Now, what's going to happen? I'm predicting in the fall. Now, basically, the Tea Party has been sort of shoved back for the moment with some minor victories.
Sure they have, because the one thing that the Tea Party really doesn't have, well, two things they really don't have is money.
Yeah.
And good organization. Yeah. I mean, you know, all due respect to some of the folks who are quote-unquote leaders in our Tea Party movement, both here in the state and nationally, there's too few trying to do too much.
Yeah.
And there needs to be better organization, and there needs to be more structure. Now, well, sounds like what I'm talking about is they need to form a party. and honestly, folks, that is what I'm talking about.
Yeah.
They need to form a party. I've pretty much, even though I know my registration has an R on it, I've not been a Republican for years. I'm going to formalize it in the next primary. I'm pulling an issues only ballot because I'm done with it.
I've been a registered Republican since 1976, but the only time I ever voted for instance, for a Republican presidential candidate was I got suckered in 2000.
Oh, you did, didn't you?
Yeah, I did.
Oh, no.
I got suckered in 2000, and I swore about 18 months in, I said, this will never happen again. And yes, folks, I'm talking about George W. Bush, because I saw what his nominees, and I saw what his policies were doing, and I saw these things, and I said, okay, I fell into the very trap that I've been trying to get other people not to fall in for 30 years. I fell in it, and I said, never again, and I haven't. That means, yes, I've voted no for president several times. Sometimes I voted for third party candidates. Guys, I'm fully aware. Yes, I wasted my vote.
Yes.
So, quote unquote. Except there's a reason I know it's not a waste, because when the Republican party officials come out and tell me I wasted my vote,
mm-hmm.
what that means is you hurt me.
Right.
Yes, I did, and I did it deliberately, and I intend to continue. As Khan said in The Wrath of Khan, I intend to go on hurting him. Instead of Captain Kirk, I intend to go on hurting him. Yes, I intend to continue hurting you until you either withdraw or you do the right thing. I don't think you're capable of doing the right thing. Or we get enough support of people who also intend to hurt you that you're beaten back and beaten out of the office. That's what we need. And in fact, folks, that's why things like Central Committee are important. That's why state central, local centrals, precinct committee men, all that stuff are important offices, but you got to be smart enough to know when to tell these guys to go away. Stop yes. selling it to me. We know people who we like on Central Committee, but who aren't really smart enough to get the job done. They fall into the traps. Well, these guys are smart. They've been doing this. They're professionals. A lot of these guys, a lot of our friends are amateurs.
And yes, they are.
They get stuck. And like I said, you know, I'm not without sin on that point. I fell into the trap.
Well, this is where we have a situation where you have to know your theology in order to know your politics.
Yes.
If you go into this thinking everybody's basically good and they all have high motives, you're going to get hurt.
Oh, you're going to get spanked.
You're going to get hurt bad.
Yeah.
When you go in realizing the heart of man is basically evil, and that it's selfish and self-centered, and politics is just a field of play for that kind of sin, then you can not get played and get and understand they're dealing with a different dictionary than you are. They want you to believe it's your dictionary, but they're the one making the definitions.
Yep. Well, we're out of time for today. I think that was a pretty good return from hiatus for you.
Well, thank you. Glad to be back.
So we'll be back again next week. Be sure to tune in next week when we'll have something else interesting for you right here on Principles and Policies.